Mike Podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. Today's episode is with the writer and director Teddy Cecil for the film Helio. This is the third time we've recorded it now. This was actually supposed to have gone up on July 20th for preview night of Comic-Con, but unfortunately we've had some major internet issues out here in San Diego. So right now I am actually recording this inside the elevator at my hotel because it was the quietest, most soundproof area I could find. But hey, it will do for now. So, but Austin and I sat down with Teddy at the Hilton here in San Diego, and it was so much fun being able to chat with Teddy. Even both of us just getting into San Diego, we ran into several issues. We won't really get into that now. We talked about that in the live episode that we taped a couple days later. But yeah, we've had just an amazing time here in San Diego. Everybody has been so accommodating to us and has treated us so well. I've been able to meet a lot of great people out here. So thank you. Thank you so much for any of you that have come up and said hi and come up and talk to us. And for the handful of people that came out to the live show, thank you. Hopefully you guys have had a chance to see Teddy's film Helio. It actually goes out live worldwide on Vimeo on July 27th. We will have the links and everything for you there. Yeah, it was great talking to Teddy about how this film kind of came together, a little bit of his background, and just learning about him. Hopefully we'll get to talk to Teddy even more in depth eventually in the future. He was a lot of fun to spend some time with, and even before we were recording afterwards, just kind of being able to talk and joke with him. A lot of fun. So make sure you check out Helio. Again, we'll have all the links for that up on the site. I do apologize again for the delay on this episode. It was supposed to go up 4 days ago, and unfortunately, because of internet issues out here, it got delayed. So also coming this same week, we will have the live episode that will be coming out with Rob Kuttner and David Peterson. That was a lot of fun to record with those guys and to hear about both of their stories as well. I really hope you guys enjoy this episode. Make sure you're following me on Twitter, at Tim Drake. You can see everything you know that's been going on here at San Diego Comic-Con. Again, it's been a lot of fun. Hope you guys enjoy this episode with writer and director Teddy Cecil. Go check out Helio.
Like a month ago.
I think we actually maybe found out 2 months ago, like officially. I think it was 2 months ago, and then we were allowed to announce it like 2 weeks ago. So it was also harder to get people to come, especially, you know, because you have to have tickets.
Yeah. You know? So now how many festivals is this already? Because I know you guys have won a bunch of awards for the film.
I think it's like over... It's more than we thought. It was like over 100, maybe, technically.
Yeah. Wow.
That's awesome.
But, you know, some of them are probably, you know, they're all different things.
Yeah.
So the range is crazy, and there's a lot of festivals out there now.
Did you, plan that in the budget to submit all the festivals, like, beforehand, or was that, like, a post-production?
It was a post-production thing, but we didn't think, first of all, that's the right way to think. Yeah, you know, line producers go in, and they usually budget all that stuff in there. We weren't sure exactly what our strategy would be, and we were kind of going for broke on actually making the film. Already it was hard to kind of keep it such a contained project because we were trying to do... Every time we went to somebody to talk about the project, they'd say, wow, that's ambitious, which made us feel really...
like, thanks, I know.
Or like, you know, first of all...
That's the courteous industry fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what do you even say to that, right?
Yeah.
You know, you would say, it'd be like saying thank you to someone saying, screw you, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so it was tough. And, you know, one of the things that got people involved was convincing them that they get to collaborate a lot, which they did, and made the process a whole lot better in general. But I think that alone gave them a little bit of, a stake in the film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely made it feel like it was worth their time going into it.
Yeah, that's the idea. And, it's tough because I shot it, I think, when I was, like, after I turned 25. And it took like over 2 years of post.
Damn.
And we did not think it would take that long.
Yeah, you never do. You get in the editing room,
exactly.
You're like, damn.
You just want it better and better and better, you know, and little things. And you start getting fewer and fewer VFX artists working with you, you know, and some of that makes the pipeline kind of clog up a bit.
Yeah.
But the whole thing's a challenge, and that's kind of the nature of the beast.
So now, is this your first time coming down to San Diego Comic-Con?
Absolutely. I am pretty excited.
Yeah, it's quite the experience. I mean, this is only our second year.
Yeah.
And I mean, last year there was definitely the learning curve.
Yes.
And it's like, I feel very prepared this year, but at the same time,
You're always kind of winging it a little bit.
Yeah, never know, right? That's kind of the Comic-Con way, I imagine.
Yeah.
You might turn a corner and all of a sudden there's like a bunch of Cylons.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, quite literally here, you turn the corner and you do not know what's going to happen or who just might be there. So, I mean, not even kidding, coming down, because we're here in the Hilton Bayfront, walking out these doors last year, John Barrowman from Doctor Who and...
What?
Like, and he's come to Salt Lake Comic Con, so I've met him a few times, and I went to say hi, and he just kind of grabbed me, and was just like, hey, let's do this, and like he grabs my phone, and takes the selfie, and then he's just like, I've got to go to the loo, and just went. And it was just one of those moments where it was like, all right, that was John Barrowman.
You never know what's going to happen. You just can't tell.
Yeah, it gets crazy. You never know who's going to...
I like that you don't even explain what you want. He just grabs you and is like, let's do this.
I think he saw that look in my eyes. He was just like...
You guys, you had vinegar strokes.
I know. He saw you with recording equipment and was like, you're my guy. Yeah. Let's do this. I don't know what it is, but I'm going
to
do it.
So, yeah, it's a good time. There's a lot of... I think if you get the time, you have to go over to Petco Park and check out Nerdist Carnival.
Oh.
The event that Nerdist and Geek and Sundry's event. We spent more time there last year probably than actually in the convention center.
Really?
Yeah,
it's just a chill spot.
A lot of people don't pay attention to it.
Oh, that makes me happy. Because I'm one of the things I'm nervous about is like the amount of people here.
Yeah.
It caught on by the end of the week. Like,
by Saturday when everyone's like, oh, Comic-Con's in town, what should we do? Then
and then some bigger guests then, that Daniel Radcliffe coming and...
That's pretty big.
Yeah.
The whole cast of Warcraft came that day as
Really?
So we had a lot of people hung around that day for that stuff as well. But yeah, the first couple of days, it was like no one. We're like, hell yeah, just enjoying it all with no people.
Wow.
Pretty much.
It was kind of like they just popped up. Nobody knew that they were going to be there.
They announced who was coming, but like they still, like, I'm kicking myself still to this day because like last year, Rami Malek and Christian Slater both came to promote season one of Mr. Robot.
Oh,
and I'd worked with Christian on a film years ago. And then I'd met Rami at an Academy event for Short Term 12 when he was in that. And so I wanted to go up, and both of us were just kind of standing back. And I was like, I don't know. And like, they were just chatting with a few people. And I was like, we'll just let him be. And like, see how big Mr. Robot's got now. I'm kind of kicking myself. I'm just like, I should have gone up and talked with him again.
They're this year, right? They're here this year.
Yeah, they're back this year. They've got an entire offsite.
Really?
Two for it. Yeah, and it's supposed to be like a virtual reality experience.
That's what happens when you win...
when you win a couple of Golden Globes and some Emmys.
Yeah, no big deal.
Whatever.
So now, kind of back to Helio, how did the idea kind of come about for this? I mean, it's definitely grabs you from the moment both of us sat down and watched it, and the first thing I said to Austin was, I love nothing more than when that just opening shot just like grabs you and pulls you into the film.
Oh,
and I mean, it's beautifully shot. That was the first thing both of us were just like, this is
beautiful. I'm curious, was Blade Runner an influence?
Yeah, Blade Runner was, I mean, how could it not be? In a lot of ways,
I just started getting into
sci-fi,
I was like,
you know?
Yeah.
But that's definitely one of the ones people draw on a lot. These kind of similar aesthetic that we were going for, because it's a blend of past and future technologies. It takes place in a world, just so everybody knows, that's in the far future, but it's hundreds of years after a war kind of devastated the planet. So everything that they have, and they're living underground now, in this kind of protected shelter that resembles like a domed city.
Which really was a holy shit factor for me, when all of a sudden he gets to the top, and I was just like, wait, what? They were the entire time. I was like, where is he climbing to? Where is he climbing to?
Awesome, man. Awesome. That makes me really, really happy. You have no idea. But the genesis for the idea was, there's a bunch of elements actually that came into it. I've always been kind of fascinated with skylines in general and wanted to do something with that in a short way. And then it kind of built into something way bigger. And then I sort of simultaneously was developing an idea for a feature film. And I wanted to learn a lot about VFX and stuff like that because I've, been studying film and working in film, but I didn't know anything about VFX, and I felt like it was one of the big obstacles I needed to kind of overcome before I could feel really confident taking on stuff and showing people that I could do stuff, showing myself more than anything.
Because that first impression's big with the your first feature, you know?
Like, exactly.
That's tough, that first one.
I know,
everyone
scary,
judges you from then on, and you're like, ah, and you're like trying to backtrack the bombs, and it's a, it's a lot of pressure.
And like, with regards to that, you know, the genre that you pick for your first film can really also pigeonhole you a lot of the time.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing that's nice about sci-fi, is that it's, in my mind, it's not even really a genre in a traditional sense, because it doesn't refer to the emotions that you're really experiencing. Maybe the wonderment and awe. But outside of that, I mean, that's something you experience in fantasy, too. So it's not necessarily a sci-fi thing. But outside of that, you know, sci-fi can be a comedy, it can be horror, it can be anything that's, you know, all these huge sets of emotions. So I feel like by doing sci-fi, even if you were to get pigeonholed in some way, you could...
You can still venture out.
Yeah,
still
you can
has
still do a scary movie or a funny movie or a sad movie, you know?
Yeah.
And that's one thing that's exciting about it. But for the feature, I have this idea that would be essentially an introduction to a trilogy if the first one goes over well.
Yeah.
You know? And that's kind of the idea. It's essentially, the short is more a visual adaptation of Plato's Allegory of the Cave. And the feature would kind of be more an actual adaptation of Dante's Inferno.
Plato's Allegory of the Caves is honestly one of my favorite stories. I remember in one of the psych classes I had, and I had never even tied the two together until you said that.
Wow.
And like now as I'm going, like I'm racing back through the film in my mind, and I totally see that now.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like that actually makes me love it that much more. Yeah, now that I recognize, like, yeah, I'd never caught on to that was what you were going for.
It's
there.
A loose reimagining, and if you know, if that was something that people
move all the stuff out of the way here.
Yep.
Do you mind?
If it's not an actual literal reimagining of Plato's Allegory of the Cave,
but it's a likening too.
Yeah, because it would also be near impossible to actually make a literal narrative version of it that's not, you know.
But for those that don't know the allegory, I mean, it's basically you've got the shadow people who don't recognize that what's behind them aren't these just terrible, evil monsters. And I mean, really, where you've got the guy that escapes and the people that basically he starts a revolution. I mean, they're like the shadow people that are, in a sense, waking up then. And so that, I mean, it's a beautiful homage to it, if anything. Then.
So, I mean, that story's always been a big influence for me. And the more I write, the more I see kind of themes of it in almost all of my stuff. But, you know, it's stuff that's unproduced at this point, so who knows what we'll end up making it to screen if I'll continue that kind of theme.
Yeah.
I really like playing around, I think, with reality to some extent. Not in, like, a dream state kind of way, more like in a perception kind of way.
Yeah, and I like that. When it's a dream, it's like it can be, you know, oh, that was a cool... But yeah, when it kind of gives you that tie into reality of just like, yeah, I could see that.
Right.
I could see that happening.
So much more exciting. And that's one of the things that's cool about sci-fi, is that there's a connection between like reality and, you know, almost fantasy.
So how long ago, I mean, you mentioned it took 2 years in post-production. Yeah. How long ago was it that you really started the entire process of creating the film?
So I think I was like 24, 20. So it kind of snowballed really fast. And so it was only maybe, I think I had the idea for it when I turned 25 and then like right halfway through 24. Yeah, so it took me about 6 months from when I had the first version of the short to when we were actually getting the pieces together for this shoot. And then, you know, but that's not, that a lot of that time was just me kind of working on the script and things like that, not actually doing stuff with other people.
So now there was one of the actors that's in the film that right as we started going, Austin actually just worked with him.
Oh, yeah.
Dennis Kiefer?
Who it was? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just worked with him on Wind River, and then Austin worked with Ed Harris last year at the Sundance Labs, and I guess he's Ed's stunt double, is that what you said?
Yeah, that's what he said. I was like, oh, I know him, and I was like, where do I know him from? And he was working stunts on Wind River, and I was like, oh, yeah, and he said he was Ed Harris's stunt double. But anyways, it was just funny. Came across a familiar face.
He's super talented. I actually, you know, one of my projects that I want to do, I've got tons of them, but would be actually a project about stunt guys, a documentary. And I could even start with him. He's so fascinating. And he's probably the source of my inspiration, actually, for wanting to delve into that kind of subject matter. But he's super talented. If you actually look at like his IMDb page, the films that he's been in have probably grossed more than any of whatever you can think of, just because he's one of the go-to stunt guys.
Yeah, I know that's a category, too, that there's more and more discussion every year about adding stunts to the Oscars.
Right.
So because the stunt people just go unnoticed, and it's like so many of those major films that get those Oscar nominees, there were a lot of stunt guys behind them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, on Wind River, I remember Elizabeth Olsen was like, half the time, we're not even filming. Yeah. We're just like hanging out, and like our stunt double's doing it all. Right. And then we like show in for the close-up, and then peace. And
like, every time she watches The Avengers, she's like, I was really a badass, seriously.
Yeah, guys, I did all of it.
Right. Oh, filmmaking.
Yeah.
So now, Helio releases next week on Vimeo.
Yes, correct.
On the 27th, and that's... worldwide, or is it regional?
That's worldwide, I believe. And it's for, I think it's paid at least initially, and then, it'll eventually be up there for everybody.
Awesome.
So that's, what I'm excited about getting it so everybody can see it.
That's the good thing about all that, all the success it's having, going back to making your first feature, is now you got some stuff to pad your back, like some stuff to hang your hat on, like
hopefully
at least get people to see you, you've made a successful short, which is tough.
That was the idea, hopefully it pans out that way. And again, thank you for, mentioning that. But, it's so tough to get things started, and it's such a saturated market already, which, is great for lovers of film, but, and it's great for filmmakers too, for the community, but it can be tough to just get noticed.
Yeah. So it's one of those industries where you can scream as loud as you want to scream, but so many times you're screaming at the wall right in front of you.
Exactly, man. Exactly. True words have never been spoken.
It's like, the panel's over there.
Right.
So is this the final stop then for the film? Then,
as far as festival stuff? Yeah. I think there might be a few other foreign ones that it's gonna go to, but it's gonna be online, and we're just because sometimes people reach out and say, we saw your film somewhere, we'd like to screen it at a festival, and that's kind of how the numbers grow. So there's a few instances like that, especially abroad. But yeah, this is pretty much the last stop for us. We just finished shooting our second short film.
Nice.
Less than a week ago. It's not as traditionally ambitious as this last project in a kind of production sense, but as far as the narrative goes, that's where the trickiness lies.
Awesome. And any insight you can give to that yet, or is it still very under wraps?
Sure. It's a comedy, first of all, different. And it's about a guy who realizes he's the star of a bad movie. That's what his life is. And he kind of figures it out, and he thinks he comes up with a way to change it and rewrite his own narrative to be the life he thinks he wants.
I like that. It's very creative. It almost rings a little bit close to home.
Right, I know, we're all insane.
You have to be partially.
Yeah. So where can everybody kind of go to check out Helio?
Yeah.
I know you guys have a website.
Yep.
So what is that website, and where are the social media links?
Great question. I know a lot of people back home would be thanking you for asking that. You can check it out at heliothefilm.com and Helio the Film at pretty much all the social media sites like Facebook and Twitter and some other stuff, I'm sure. But Helio the Film. And then you can also check out our company, Shadow Council Productions. And, we have Facebook, and I think we have a Twitter page for the company. I don't know what exactly is on it at this point, because we're still getting our legs going in that arena. But it's a fun process, and you should definitely check it out. If you see the film, or if you want to support us in any way, I can't tell you how much that would mean. And then you can find out also about our upcoming projects and how we can be a part of this filmmaking community together.
Awesome. And is there any social media links for you if anybody wants to just follow you?
Yeah, I think so. Teddy Cecil at Twitter.
You're like me.
Again, that I'm near. So that's gonna get going this week. That's what's happening. Yep. So start friending me and liking my tweets. I don't know what
That's how Austin goes.
Tim's
about
my
it
Twitter
too.
Manager.
Oh yeah.
He made that joke. I was hosting a radio show in Salt Lake a couple weeks ago. And I told Austin, I was like, I'm just getting this game going on air. I'm using your Twitter handle to pretend like you sent something in because I need to get the ball rolling on this game. And he just responds back and he's like, cool, you're basically my Twitter manager, so whatever.
Twitter's not my ball game, but Tim's good at it.
You know, people probably actually have those now.
Oh, sure, they totally do. I know Ashton Kutcher actually did it for the longest time.
Kutch has to have
it. Yeah.
You know? I mean, come on.
So, and at this point, I'm pretty sure Cheech and Chong's is run by the porn industry. So I'm almost positive theirs is.
Yeah.
You'll just be scrolling through it, and then you're just all of a sudden like, oh, there's that. And,
well, and then there's those. And there's...
Cool. I'm into all that. So I'm gonna go on to
Cheech and Chong.
Yeah, right. That's their handle. That's what I'll... Okay, cool. I know what I'm following first.
So I'm glad that we were able to make this work. I know both of us kind of...
Yeah.
I mean, it's the first day of Comic-Con. It's always just kind of a clusterfuck trying to figure it all out, especially when you're driving down from L.A. I mean, the drive down, whether it's the 5 or the 405 getting down here, it's a nightmare. Uh-huh. So I feel like I'm like right out of a Californian sketch right there. Just take the 405.
It's just a nightmare. If everyone would have seen your eye roll when you did it.
So, well, cool. Thank you so much, Teddy. So we'll definitely get everybody over there to check out the film.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much for having me. I love your show. You've got a great voice.
Oh, thank you.
Really, I mean it. Both of you guys. So keep doing what you're doing. It's incredible.
Oh, thank you very much.